Welcome back, everyone. Hopefully you had an opportunity to do what you needed to do. Took our break a little early, but we wanted to make sure Dr. Ford and her team has an opportunity to present the latest on fishery dependent surveys in the Northeast Trawl Advisory Panel. I believe Dr. Ford will be with Peter Chase online and Dr. Anna Mercer. So I will kick it over to you, Dr. Ford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, council members, for your time and attention today. I'm really happy to be here and provide you with updates on some of the fishery independent survey activities from calendar year 2025 at the Northeast Fishery Science Center. My name is Dr. Catherine Ford. I'm the Population and Ecosystems Monitoring and Analysis Division Director at the Northeast Fishery Science Center in Woods Hole. I'm also the lead Northeast Fishery Science Center lead for the Northeast Trawl Advisory Panel, and PMAD is a relatively large division. It includes several major programs, including fishery independent surveys, fish biology, marine development, advanced technologies, and cooperative research. As Mr. Chair identified, I'm joined today by Mr. Peter Chase and Dr. Anna Mercer. They're both online. They'll be presenting portions of this presentation. And just for a little bit of background, the council last received the survey-specific presentation in January of 2025 or 2024. So I'm going to start with some survey updates. I'm just going to cover a couple of the surveys that we do, covering the trawl surveys. Mr. Chase will present the scallop survey update, and Dr. Mercer will cover the regional industry-based trawl survey that we're developing in partnership with the Northeast Trawl Advisory Panel, or NTAP. And then I'll conclude with some announcements from related activities if we have time. As a quick reminder for folks who aren't as familiar with this particular survey enterprise, fishery independent surveys are a little bit different than fishery dependent surveys in their methods. FDD work, or fishery dependent work, occurs during commercial and recreational harvest activities and are thus focused on the time, space, and methods that are used by the fisheries themselves. Fishery independent surveys use both research and fishing vessels as platforms to conduct standardized monitoring activities using gear and methods designed to address specific scientific objectives. The combination of both the fishery independent surveys and the fishery dependent data acquisitions done by the Northeast Fishery Science Center and others is crucial to generate the data needed for managing the fisheries. And so the surveys that the Northeast Fishery Science Center supports, focused on the fish side, we also have a lot of protected species surveys, are the multi-species bottom trawl survey, the cooperative bottom longline survey. I've included the NEOMAP surveys in this presentation. I'll explain those in just a minute. We have a surf clam ocean quahog survey, a scallop dredge survey, and a scallop habcam survey. It's an optical survey. We have the ECOMON survey, which is an oceanographic and plankton survey. We have a summer ecosystem northern shrimp survey in the Gulf of Maine. We have a shark bottom longline survey and a shark pupping and nursery survey. We also have related studies, a lot of different activities that are done in conjunction with these longstanding operational surveys, including eDNA surveys, active acoustics work, hook and line experiments. We started those to explore sampling within wind farms, autonomous vehicle developments, mackerel and herring work, bluefin tuna and tilefish are all areas that we're actively involved in. I'm going to start this presentation with information about some of our complementary survey activities that we view as important components of the overall survey enterprise here in the Northeast, and then I'll get into some more detail with the Northeast Fishery Science Center's bottom trawl survey, and then I'll pass it on to Pete and Anna for the scallop survey and the regional industry-based trawl survey development. So for those who aren't familiar with NEOMAP, it's the Northeast Area Monitoring and Assessment Program. It's coordinated by ASMFC. The coordinator is Janita Patel. There are multiple surveys across the states that are represented by this umbrella organization, and three of them we directly support: the Maine New Hampshire survey, the Massachusetts DMF survey, and the Southern New England Mid-Atlantic survey that Virginia Institute of Marine Science does, or VIMS. So we work closely with them and share information about gear performance. None of these surveys are connected to each other other than through communication and sharing information. They all have their individual protocols and standardized gear, but they all produce very similar products for their individual states or regions, including indices of abundance for stock assessments, age and sexual maturity samples, habitat information, and environmental data. So I'm just going to provide some statistics. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about the program and what they did in 2025, but these are their performance statistics for their trawl surveys for the three NEOMAP surveys that we're directly connected to at the Northeast Fishery Science Center. So the station completion rates spanned from 68%. The fall Maine, New Hampshire survey had a 68% completion rate last fall, all the way up to 100% with the VIMS surveys. You can see there are different sea day totals. There are sea days that we target. We try to get all the work done in a certain number of sea days. Sometimes we only have a certain number of actual working days within that envelope, and that can change, and that affects our production rate. So we're looking at the number of stations on those active fishing days as our production rate. So we're experimenting with some metrics to look at efficiency of surveys, both from cost and scientific perspectives. And so we're experimenting with some of these metrics to see what they tell us. It gives you a sense of, you know, this is tough work to do. You're doing, you know, seven stations a day at the most because it takes us a long time to process the catches. And I will note that with the NEOMAP surveys, these are 12 daylight, they're daytime surveys. So they typically work something like 12. In some cases in the springs, they'll get up to 15 or 16 hours a day. We also have complimentary survey to the Northeast Fishery Science Center's bottom trawl survey, and it's our Gulf of Maine industry-based bottom longline survey. This survey was launched in 2014 in response to some of the challenges of the bottom trawl survey in the Gulf of Maine not being able to sample some of the harder seafloor bottoms. And so we launched this survey using bottom longline survey gear. And this is an industry partnership with the FE Mary Elizabeth and Tenacious 2. And this work, they do 45 random stratified stations. They sample using a tub trawl bottom long line. They operate in the spring and the fall coincident with the bottom trawl survey. They also have a video survey for habitat classification. They do current measurements, bottom temperature, and depth data as well. This survey provides indices of abundance for 10 stock assessments, also produces age and sexual maturity samples, habitat and environmental data. Their statistics for 2025 were full station completion rates, sea days, they did their 25 out of 25, and their production is pretty standard at 2.5 stations per day. And apologies for these maps might be hard to read, but they use the same depth strata that our bottom trawl survey uses, and then they stratify within those depth strata with different habitat types, rough and smooth bottom. That's the different colors. So there's a tan color and a blue color, and then they randomly select stations within those different habitats. So the big survey, the Northeast Fishery Science Center Multispecies Bottom Trawl Survey, that probably receives the most attention, is done on the Henry B. Bigelow. This is an OMAO vessel. The way NOAA is organized is into different line offices, and OMAO is a separate line office from NOAA Fisheries, Office of Marine and Aviation Operations. So we work in partnership with them. They give us sea days to conduct this survey. It's a 209-foot vessel. As you know, this survey monitors ecosystem changes and trends in abundance, distribution, and life history for demersal fish. We provide information for 63 different stocks, and we collect more than 600 taxa. So there's a lot of scientific import to this survey beyond just stock assessment. We also inform status of ecosystem reports and climate assessments in addition to the stock assessments. This survey operates both the trawl and acoustic instrumentation, so it's constantly collecting acoustic data for fish biomass. And we use the Bigelow primarily, that's our kind of mothership. And then the Bigelow, we're very lucky that Bigelow has a sister ship called the Pisces. These are almost identical in all major ways, length, width, they're acoustically quiet vessels. They were both custom designed to do fishery survey work by the Office of Marine and Aviation Operations for NOAA. This survey, the map shows the depths and region strata that we separate the survey into. We do that because we use a random design. So when we select stations, we're selecting them randomly. And so we stratify to make sure there is some distribution of that random sampling across the whole survey region. We sample in the fall and the spring. We have 90-day windows where we're targeting 60 survey days, and we accomplish about 300. We aim to accomplish about 370 stations per year or per season. More than about 350 stations is really a typical and successful survey in our opinion. And this is a pretty remarkable survey in that it's a continuous time series since the 1960s. I think it's only beat by the URI Narragansett Bay survey, which started in 1959. And we cover a lot more space. So I have some good news and some mixed news, I'll say. So the spring survey, we sampled 370 out of 377 stations, 98% completion. We worked 54 out of 60 sea days, and we had a 7 station per day production rate. In the fall, I'm going to call this mixed news. I'm sure a lot of people won't agree with me in this room. We had a 68% completion rate, but I'd like to point out that this survey was done during the lapse of inappropriations. And this is the first time the survey was done during a lapse in appropriations. I'll explain a little bit more about that in the next slide. It was a tough season. We actually mirrored the Maine, New Hampshire station completion rate of 68%. We had a tough time with weather and with mechanical issues. And we sampled 45 out of the 60 target days with a 5.7 station per day completion rate. So my main highlights here for the spring, very successful survey. We did all of our oceanographic sampling. We rerun this survey in partnership with our Ecomon plankton survey. We did a pilot eDNA project. That was a real highlight of the survey in the spring. We collected paired trawl eDNA samples at 77 stations, and we're working toward operationalizing eDNA sampling on the survey. We did have some challenges. Staffing uncertainties were pretty rough last spring, both on the ship and science sides. That was during the time frame where probationary staff were being dismissed, and we had requests for the deferred resignation programs and things like that. But we were able to fully staff the survey. There were some mechanical issues, departure delays on legs 1 and 3, and some weather. Leg 2 was a rough weather leg. We also are running into some challenges with the development of marine protected areas in Canada. We were working very closely with our Canadian colleagues to mitigate any impacts on our survey, and so far, all of that is going very well. In the fall, as I said before, this was our first ever conduct of a survey during the shutdown. So this exception in the past has not been given, and so we were really thrilled that this administration and NOAA Fisheries recognized the criticality of this scientific survey and allowed it to continue despite the lapse of appropriations. But it was unfortunate that it was such a tough fall season. We accomplished 68% of the stations, but we were able to spread that coverage out over all of the strata. There was some very, very conscientious planning of the station allocation in order to cover all of the strata. We also lost gear. We lost doors and a net, and that resulted in one day of grappling for that gear. and we did have to return to port to resplice wire. The gear was recovered under a separate initiative that was supported by the OMAO dive team that recovered the doors and our very high value sensors. And that used the Glory Michelle. It was an excellent operation. We also struggled with mechanical issues. I believe it's 11 days for mechanical issues, 11 days for weather issues. We also had slower productivity because we were using a different acoustic sensor. Our high resolution acoustic sensor on the Bigelow was damaged. So we were using a lower resolution sensor, which slowed down scouting. We do scouting before every tow. So not the most fantastic completion rate, but much better than zero, which could have been the outcome. I also wanted to point out that we were very efficient in this survey. We only sampled 58% of our planned days, but we still managed to get 68% of our stations for the trawl. I believe we had 78% of our stations for Ecomon. And I'm really proud of these survey and assessment teams and how they worked so closely together during a government shutdown in order to really think through how to best allocate the time that we had available to us. We also worked very closely with the fish biologists to explore extending the survey into December. I won't go through each of these points, but we did work closely. Dr. Hare worked with NOAA to secure additional ship time for an added leg to get more stations. I won't read through all of these bullet points for the sake of time, but we did work closely again with the assessment biologists, the fish biologists, and the trawl survey staff themselves to make sure that we were falling within the historical temporal range of the survey and that there wouldn't be any temporal impacts extending into December 9th. I also wanted to point out here that this survey happened largely within the fall lapse in appropriations and takes a huge number of people to successfully accomplish. So the trawl team, the team of federal volunteers that help us out, the shoreside staff that support a wide variety of support needs for this survey were all working in pretty unusual circumstances, and they still were able to make this work. There are also external volunteers and contract staff that really went above and beyond to keep this survey happening. And I wanted to emphasize the this sort of team behind the survey. This also helps us frame the complexity that this type of science initiative has and can help us inform the conversations around designing the industry-based survey that Dr. Mercer is going to cover in a little bit. So we have 62 fish biologists, survey technicians, gear specialists, and shoreside support staff that helped us pull this off last fall. However, there are extraordinary efforts to make this survey work, but I can't deny that we've had variable performance over the past several years. We get asked the question a lot that how will this affect assessments? I'm not going to go into a lot of detail here, but it does vary assessment to assessment. And one way we've been sort of mitigating those impacts is by working very closely with assessment biologists to help us allocate the time and stations that we have. Another risk, in addition to vessel performance issues that we've been struggling with, is the inability to operate in wind areas. This vessel and the towed gear is going to be unable to operate in those wind energy areas. So we've been working on several different mitigation efforts to shore up the survey and make sure it's as successful as it can be. So one of the things we worked on this year is making sure the Pisces is ready to go. The Pisces is a sister ship to the Bigelow. It's going to be used when the Bigelow is in dry dock and a midlife refit in a couple of years. And the Pisces can also be a kind of fill-in for Bigelow if Bigelow isn't operable in an emergency situation. That's what happened in 2017. So we expended a lot of energy and effort with OMAO to make sure the Pisces was ready to go. We're also planning a complementary industry-based survey, that the regional industry-based survey that Dr. Mercer will talk about. And we've been working really hard on ongoing communications with OMAO, making sure that we prioritize the scheduling and operational needs for this survey. And they've been helpful in exploring these, you know, adding days where we need to add days and things like that. So that's great. I also want to point out that another real challenge the survey has is staffing shortages. This is not just from this past year. This has been an ongoing challenge. It's been this staff group has been chipped away at over a decade or more. We lost our trawl survey lead, Phil Politis, about a year and a half ago, and Dr. Catherine Foley stepped in as acting survey lead for the past year and a half. We've been unable to complete the hiring for that position due to the hiring freezes. So real kudos to Dr. Foley for not just stepping in, but really keeping this whole program afloat and supporting that whole team in continuing. We also are working on making sure that our legs, we rely on a lot of federal staff beyond just the trawl survey staff. So we are working with OMAO to return to 2-week legs because people are being pulled from other jobs to help support this work. And the difference between a 2-week and 3-week leg is pretty significant for those staff. So we're really returning to schedules that are more feasible. And then we're very focused on addressing staff reductions to the survey group. We transitioned folks from other programs this past year. We've encouraged internal details. We've expanded our contractor seagoing support, and we continue to focus on this. We're still well below our historical staffing levels, so this is very much in the front of our minds. So I wanted to end on a little bit of a higher note with some of the fun stuff. So here are some of the interesting findings and highlights that were provided by the survey leads. So for the bottom trawl survey, spring of 25 had the highest spring catches of black sea bass, blueback herring, and bay anchovy that we've seen on the Bigelow. That was a full year ago. I'm talking about last spring. We have high numbers of juvenile haddock encountered on Georgia's Bank and Gulf of Maine in the fall of 2025. For the NEOMAP surveys, Maine, New Hampshire found cold temperatures last spring. They saw small catches, especially in the deeper strata. They caught 3 ripe and running cod in the spring survey. The cod catch was low overall in the fall survey, and weather was a real challenge in the fall. Maine, New Hampshire also really struggles with interactions with fixed gear. The MassDMF survey, the spring saw upticks in sculpin and young of the year cod in the Gulf of Maine, uptick in skates in southern New England, lots of macro algae, and the fall saw large spiny dogfish catch and their second highest abundance of winter flounder. That was in the Gulf of Maine. They also found their highest abundance of summer flounder in southern New England. For the VIMS Mid-Atlantic Southern New England survey, the spring saw lots of macro algae, diverse but smallish catches, and lots of clear-nosed skate, and there was no notable catch reported in the fall. For the bottom longline survey done by the Northeast Fisheries Science Center, there were low ground fish catches in the spring, strong whitehead catches in the fall. They found weather to be a real challenge in the fall as well. And they introduced a new data acquisition system called CoFisher, emphasizing our continuous focus on improving our efficiency over the course of the years. I also want to point out the bottom longline survey was used in the whitehake and wolffish assessments, and they published this year about their substrate complexity that they find in their cameras. So they did a habitat publication this year, which is pretty exciting. So with that, I'm going to pass it on to Mr. Peter Chase. He's our Ecosystem Surveys Branch Lead, and he'll be telling us about the Scallop Survey Enterprise at the Northeast Fisheries Science Center. So, Pete, if you could unmute, and we'll hand it to you.
Yep, thanks, Catherine. Good morning, everybody. As Catherine mentioned, I'm going to provide a brief overview of the Scallop Survey efforts that were completed in 2025. Scallop surveys were conducted by the Science Center as well as our RSA-funded survey partners last year. Both VIMS and the main DMR conducted dredge surveys. Kunimesset Farm Foundation conducted a HABCAM survey, and SMAST conducted a DropCAM survey. The Science Center completed a dredge survey aboard the fishing vessel Celia, a HABCAM survey aboard the Bigelow, and also deployed long-range AUVs using vessels of opportunity. I'll provide a bit more detail on each of these efforts over the next few slides. So this is a summary of the 2025 NEFSC dredge survey. As a reminder, in 2024, we transitioned our dredge survey off of the Huar Sharp and onto an industry vessel. 2025 was our second year using the Celia, and both years have been very successful. We've had a really good experience with that vessel. We conducted a 10-day survey in July of 2025 and completed 177 random stations in the Georges Bank region. Last year was also our first year implementing GRTS for station allocation, as well as using SAMS areas as strata. As a reminder, and if you weren't aware, these changes were reviewed and approved by a subpanel of the SSC in 2024. And GRTS is a spatially balanced sampling design. It's still random station selection, but it ensures an appropriate degree of spatial coverage and distance between samples. And making those changes really improve efficiency at sea and also allow for better coverage of dense aggregations. So overall, we had a successful dredge survey last year, and we are looking forward to working with the Celia on another 10-day cruise this summer. Next slide, please. Okay, this slide provides a recap of the Science Center's 2025 HABCAM survey. Some of you are likely aware of what happened last summer, but just in case you missed it, I will provide a recap here. We had 17 days planned for HABCAM work aboard the Bigelow last June, July. And after about 3.5 days of continuous sampling, HABCAM collided with an unmarked object on Georges Bank and disconnected at the weak link, which it's designed to do in those situations. And later on, it was confirmed that the object was an uncharted shipwreck. And if you look at the map on the top right, you can see the location of the incident. It's at the northernmost end of the cruise track. And recovery of the vehicle proved to be too difficult for either divers or a small ROV. It was pretty far from shore, 200 plus feet of water depth and very strong currents. Ultimately, we were able to arrange for a larger ROV from UNC Wilmington to come out and recover HABCAM. The image in the middle of the screen there shows the ROV that was ultimately used for the recovery. And the image on the bottom shows the condition of HABCAM after it was recovered. I'm not sure how well you can see it in the image. Had a lot of growth on it, and it had corrosion on some parts, but all things considered, it was in pretty good shape, and we were obviously very happy to get it back. But the loss of the vehicle prevented any additional HABCAM work from being done during leg one. And we had planned to use the 7 sea days scheduled for a leg two to either continue the recovery efforts for the vehicle or to sail to the Mid-Atlantic and launch our AUVs. However, the ship did encounter issues that prevented it from sailing on leg two. So ultimately, we were able to get some coverage in the Mid-Atlantic with our AUVs anyway, which I'll talk about on the next slide. And RSA partners were able to cover portions of the center's HABCAM track in the Mid-Atlantic. So just to review some of the outcomes, OMAO did conduct an investigation on the loss of the vehicle. We're still waiting on the results of that investigation. And based on recommendations we've received after previous incidents such as this, we've been able to develop risk mitigation strategies. And using those strategies ultimately allowed us to recover the vehicle in reasonably good condition. And that includes having the weak link that functioned as intended, which allowed the vehicle to separate cleanly from the tow cable. And also the pinger and deck box allowed us to geolocate the exact position of the vehicle to make recovery much easier. Our HABCAM expert, Cam Fairclough, has been working really hard to make repairs on the vehicle, and we anticipate to be fully operational for a 20-day survey aboard the Bigelow in May. Next slide, please, Catherine. Okay, last year we continued to work with our HUI partners on optical data collection using long-range AUVs. During one of the HABCAM survey on the Bigelow, we conducted R&D in the Nantucket Lightship area to test the vehicles in different environments, also to test our second optical payload, which was new last year, and to evaluate calibration needs between the various survey methods. When we found out that we would not be able to use Bigelow for Light 2, we were able to pivot to a nearshore launch so that we could cover some of our planned track lines in the Mid-Atlantic. And this, I think, is a really good example of how these vehicles can be used to supplement sampling when a large vessel is unavailable for any reason. A really big advancement for us last year was we were able to operate two vehicles at the same time to collect scallop data in SAMS areas. And with these two vehicles combined, covered a track of about 128 nautical miles and collected over 48,000 image pairs in the Mid-Atlantic Bight. And those images were used in the specification process along with other data collected by the Science Center and RSA partners. The image on the top shows the 2025 AUV cruise tracks. And you can see the two vehicles, Stella and Polaris. Don't ask me which one is which, but they are in the image below that. And for 2026, we plan to use AUVs in the Mid-Atlantic Bight again. We're still working on the contracts, so we don't yet have a confirmed schedule for those trips. Next slide, please. Thanks. This slide provides some summary production information for our 2025 HABCAM and dredge surveys. Our dredge station locations can be seen on the left and our HABCAM track on the right. And if you look at the production rates, you can see that we're able to complete over 17 dredge stations per day. So that's a very high rate. It's a really busy survey for our staff. And our HABCAM coverage of about 80 nautical miles per day aboard the Bigelow is also pretty good. It shows that we can cover a lot of ground when things are operating as they should be aboard the vessel. Next slide, please. And this is just a summary slide showing the areas covered by our RSA-funded partners. You can see VIM's dredge coverage in green. CFF HABCAM is in blue, the blue track line. SMAS drop cam is gray, and then main DMR dredge coverage in orange up in the Gulf of Maine. And with that, thank you for your time, and I'll pass it back to Catherine.
Thanks, Pete. Real quick, just a preview of 2026. Spring bottom trawl survey is out right now. Over the winter, this past winter, they did a shakedown cruise on the Pisces. They did the wet lab build out on the Pisces, and they're currently on the water, and things are going reasonably well with the upgrades on the Pisces. The NEOMAP spring surveys are on track. Bottom longline survey spring is on track. Coastal pelagic shark survey is done triennially. It is planned for the spring of 2027. Scallop dredge and scallop HABCAM surveys are on track. The coast span survey, our shark pupping nursery survey. We work with other partners, and other partners are doing field work, but the field work the Northeast Fishery Science Center does in Delaware Bay has been paused. The shrimp survey was paused. It was last done in 2023. The clam survey was paused. It was last done in 2024. Those three, coast span, shrimp, clam, all those pauses are due to resource shortages. The fall bottom trawl survey is on track. It will occur on the Bigelow in the fall. And then the NEOMAP and bottom longline fall surveys are also expected to run and are on track for planning right now. So I will pass it on to Dr. Mercer now, who will cover the regional industry-based bottom trawl survey. Dr. Mercer, if you could take yourself off mute. Thanks.
Absolutely. Can everyone hear me okay?
Sure can.
Excellent. Thank you. And thank you, Dr. Ford. I'm happy to kind of update folks on where we are with the Regional Industry-Based Bottom Trawl Survey, or RIBITS, as we call it for short. This work was really motivated in three different ways. First, in the recognition that we need to work more collaboratively with the fishing industry on our survey portfolio, as well as a recognition that we need more resilience in our survey enterprise due to lost days at sea, additional marine development, as well as midlife refits coming up for NOAA ships. Understanding kind of all of these challenges that are facing our survey enterprise and led us to this best option that the Northeast Trawl Advisory Panel is really spearheading, which is the development of this regional industry-based bottom trawl survey. And we know we can do industry-based surveys in this region. We do. Catherine spoke to several examples of that in her previous slides, but it has not been done at the scale of the full Northeast region. And so that was really the focus of this work, this regional industry-based bottom trawl survey work. Next slide, please. So the long-term goal, thinking about the need here, is to reduce uncertainty and increase accuracy in resource assessments by using a collaborative fishing industry-based regional trawl survey. So again, the intent of this RIBITS initiative is not just to spot fill other surveys, but rather to develop a new time series that can be used to understand trends in abundance, biomass and biology, as well as ecosystem characteristics of multiple stocks across the Northeast region. And so as NTAP, or the Northeast Trawl Advisory Panel, move forward with designing this survey, keeping this long-term goal in mind and designing a survey that can achieve this goal has been front and center. Next slide, please. So in order to achieve that long-term goal, NTAP and the working group within NTAP that's focused on RIBITS scoped a three-phase approach, where the first two phases are really focused on operations. How do we do this? An ecosystem, multi-species bottom trawl survey on industry vessels across the Northeast region. And I'll speak a little bit more to phases one and two, but I wanted to provide a summary here just to everyone on the same page about where we are. So phase one, which is the first smaller scale pilot, was funded last year and awarded to the Virginia Institute of Marine Science and the fishing vessel, the Durana R, and that's scheduled to occur just a couple weeks from now, is really focused on operations. Again, how do we do this? What gear do we use? How does it perform across depth range? Phase two, which is currently what the NTAP working group is working to design, is focused on piloting operations at a much larger scale on multiple vessels and implementing many of the sampling and survey design decisions that the working group is currently working through. And then that that work was also recently funded just in the last month or so, and we're really excited to be moving forward on that work and be putting out an RFP in the coming months. And then finally, the third phase, which is not yet funded, would be start of a long-term survey, again, to develop that time series that can be integrated into stock assessments and other ecosystem science products. Next slide, please. So phase one, as I mentioned, was awarded to VIMS and the fishing vessel, the Durana R. On the map on the right, you can see in the black dashed oval the spatial scope of this work, which is southern New England, working inshore just south of Martha's Vineyard, out to the shelf break. Again, the intent of this phase one work is to define the operational requirements for a long-term survey. I'm specifically focusing on building an ecosystem monitoring portfolio, so integrating a full oceanographic monitoring component of this, as well as understanding the needs related to bunks and working time with one science crew and feasibility and efficiency of sampling across the depth. Another important component of phase one that we'll have a report out on to the working group in May will be how the gear that's being piloted in phase one, which is the NEMAP gear package, performs across depth and what that means for the recommendations for gear for phase two and long term. Next slide, please. Phase two RBITS, which again was recently funded just in the last month or two here, is scaled up. So on the map that you can see here, again on the right, what the working group has discussed thus far is focusing on two larger areas, Gulf of Maine, Georges Bank, as well as the Mid-Atlantic, and working across multiple vessel platforms. An essential component of phase two is applying the decisions and recommendations made by the working group as it relates to sample allocation, stratification, survey design, and gear design. And so phase two is really the chance to test what the working group recommends as the best approach in terms of operations and gear, as well as survey design that would be applied in the long term. Again, the intent with phase two is to do this work across multiple vessels so we can understand some of the challenges that we might face in deploying and standardizing gear across multiple industry platforms, as well as the requirements for those vessels in terms of berths and size and speed and everything in between. So this work is scoped for field work in spring of 2027, so a year from now. In between now and then, we'll be working to put out a request for proposals for research and industry partners to participate and collaborate in this work. And we'll also be the working group by NTAP. We'll be working to develop recommendations, again, as it relates to gear, design, and data acquisition systems. Next slide, please. So between now and then, we have a large group of folks, both in the fishing industry as well as the science community, who have been working to develop and implement these plans and will continue to do so in the months and year to come. You can see there on the right just a table with some of the phase two planning meetings that we've had with the NTAP working group here just last week, or actually just this week, sorry, on Monday. We had our first meeting on gear, and then our next meeting that we have coming up will be our second survey design meeting where the working group will be making recommendations about the different elements of the survey design to move forward with for phase two. As part of phase two, we are planning regional presentations and workshops so that more folks across the whole Northeast region, one, will be aware of and have an opportunity to provide feedback and input on the design and ultimately the implementation of this important initiative. And of course, if you're interested before those meetings occur, please don't hesitate to reach out to myself, Catherine, or anyone else who's on this NTAP working group. And I believe that's all I have. Back to you, Catherine.
Thank you, Anna. And I just wanted to end with some other survey-related updates, a more dense text slide here. Sorry about that. Ecomon is slated to go out in the spring of 2026. They're going to be prioritizing sampling Atlantic mackerel eggs in southern New England and western Gulf of Maine to inform the egg index used in assessments. The bluefin tuna slope sea larval fish survey will be going out this year, helping to redefine stock units for bluefin tuna. The Atlantic Mackerel Cooperative Research Initiative was funded, and that's ramping up. It includes acoustic surveys, egg surveys, biological sampling, and tagging over the next couple of years. We're currently planning a workshop to scope out a herring study. We're currently planning for a Gloria Michelle replacement. That vessel is used in the shrimp survey and the Mass Neomap survey. We have plans and seeking opportunities to bring both clam and shrimp back online as soon as we can. We're maintaining efforts to operationalize the eDNA sampling. We've maintained that team, and we want to have it as a regular component of our fish and plankton surveys. We've done initial work using hook and line gear to sample hard bottoms and wind energy areas, and we're continuing to assess the need and intersection of that work with the RBITS survey as wind areas develop. And we're planning for continued use of uncrewed surface vehicles. We have been using the Drix uncrewed surface vehicle. They'll be going out at the end of April through May to monitor fish and plankton biomass using active acoustics. This is work that is continued from the last couple of years. So I covered a lot of ground there. I appreciate your time and attention, and happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Ford, Dr. Mercer, and Mr. Chase. I'll take the first question. And I don't know if this is for you, Dr. Mercer, or you, Dr. Ford. Obviously, Anna did highlight phase two is funded. Yay. $3 million. I guess maybe we haven't gotten to that point yet, but do we have an understanding? Is there going to be something? Are we going to get the full $3 million to go for the survey, or is there going to be some type of amount taken off for whatever the Science Center needs moving forward on that one?
Yeah, we'll be expending the full $3 million on RBITS directly related work. The actual budget hasn't been finalized, but we'll be talking about that with NTAP.
Okay, thank you. And just to let you all know, you actually have three working group members from NTAP on here. You actually have the two co-chairs. And if you have really specific questions about Dorana R, the captain is sitting over in the corner just waiting to get this meeting over so he can get out on the water. So I'll go to Terry Alexander.
Yeah, thank you for that, Catherine and Anna and, everyone. As somebody's been working on this industry-based trawl survey for since 2014, we've been talking about this. When Bill originally re-energized the NTAP, that's what we came together for. So, it's good to see this finally getting on the water, and I have the utmost confidence in the Dorana R and its skipper over there to do a great job at this. We've been a long time coming here and happy to be here. Now, you had mentioned reinvigorating the shrimp survey, and that is so important to all our groundfish assessments that we have. It's killing us in the hake world right now. When have you got any idea on that? When that's going to start again? I know I've been approached by another member of this council about looking for private funding for that with an industry-based boat. Are you planning on doing that soon? Because it couldn't come soon enough, in my opinion. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Alexander, and thank you for the kind words about the Regional Industry-Based Trawl Survey. With regards to the shrimp survey, right now I don't have a timeline that would be a reasonable prediction of when it will come back online. I have also participated in conversations about creating a brand new industry-based shrimp survey. All of that is uncertain at this point.
Mr. Oshefsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Dr. Ford. My question is on slide 14 on the survey performance. And I'm looking at it, and it's kind of this, seems like this three-year trend. I can see COVID is in there 1 year. But I'm curious, it looks like we're following that same performance trend. And I was curious if that's like a function of sort of the random survey design where every few years more stations fall within like a wind development area, or thanks.
Oh, thank you for the question. No, the variable performance, this is the graph of the number of stations we've completed over the history of the survey. And that's more related to a vessel availability, typically heavily influenced by mechanical breakdowns of various sorts or delays coming out of a dry dock. Could be multiple week delays.
Thank you for that. Up next, I have Ms. Ware. Pete, do you have a response?
Well, I was just going to add that the big dip you see in 2000, that's two seasons we were impacted by COVID. So I think spring 2020, that survey was stopped halfway through. And then we did not sail in fall of 2020. So that kind of explains that big dip there. And then, as Catherine was saying, this ship is moving closer and closer towards its midlife period. And I think that a lot of the maintenance issues we're starting to see pop up are due to that.
Thank you for that. Ms. Ware?
Thanks. Thanks for the presentation. It was really helpful. I'll just start by emphasizing what Terry said. There's a lot of enthusiasm in Maine for a summer Gulf of Maine survey. So as discussions progress there, let us know. I was wondering if you had any more information on, I see, scope out herring study, what that's focused on or the purpose of that study.
Dr. Mercer, can you answer Ms. Ware's question?
I absolutely can. I'm happy to. Thank you for the question. So the recent resources we had come into the agency are focused on, one, executing an Atlantic Mackerel Cooperative Research Initiative that has five different research elements that I won't dive into. Your question about herring, that initiative also includes a focus on developing a research plan for Atlantic herring. So we received resources that we'll use to host a series of workshops with the fishing community where we will be discussing what we know, what we don't know about Atlantic herring, and then how we ultimately learn what we need to learn about herring to provide better scientific advice for fisheries management. So that process where we'll be developing those workshops will be kicking off in the coming months. And we're happy to share more information if you'd like.
Great. Thanks, Anna. Yeah, I'd definitely be interested in staying in the loop on that. Thanks so much.
Dr. O'Keefe.
Thank you. Good morning, Dr. Ford, Mr. Chasen, Dr. Mercer. I'm just a follow-up on this question. Could I formally request a little bit more than just being kept in the loop, and maybe we could have some coordination around the herring research study? And I think council staff would be able to share, you know, a lot of expertise on all the work that the council has done around herring. So if we could formally be kind of included in that effort, that would be really helpful.
Absolutely. We'd be happy to collaborate with you on designing those workshops, executing those workshops, and ultimately writing up what will come, which will be a research plan. Thanks for the interest, and we'll be in touch about that. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Up next, Ms. O'Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the presentation. I also want to put a very strong plug into starting the shrimp survey again. We knew when that was discontinued in 2023 that it was one of the surveys that actually caught the young of year fish, which is really important in our assessment models and our understanding of recruitment and population estimates. And I'm glad to hear it's for groundfish stocks, ironically, not for shrimp, but for groundfish stocks, it was becoming a really instrumental part of our assessments. And we've seen now with recent assessments like white hake, without it, our perceptions very, very different when we don't have that the additional data. So wanted to put a plug in for that. And thank you for bringing it back as soon as possible. Also, just wanted to ask, and maybe this is for Dr. Mercer. Also, thankfully, the longline survey was used to help with data that was really needed for white hake for the assessment last year. And being able to show more of an age composition that wasn't seen in the survey and not necessarily seen with catch. But I'm just curious with the longline survey, is there a protocol or, with consideration of bait that is used? Has there been different baits that are used or analyzed to consider maybe catches that change based on baits that are used? I mean, I see the areas that are selected, the habitat work, but I'm just curious if there's ever been any revisions to bait and how that's impacting what catch is occurring, and whether that changes in spring or fall, depending on the behavior of the fish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for that question. So the Gulf of Maine Bottom Longline Survey, when it was in design in the early 2010s, that team worked closely with the fishing community to identify which bait would be best at targeting a variety of stocks. So the bait has been consistent across the entirety of the survey. We use squid for bait, and those baiting services are provided by our collaborating captains and their bait shops. So that bait has been consistent. One area that maybe gets at your point here that that we recognize is potentially impacting the survey's ability to detect and catch fish is how that bait attracts fish. And so, and how the availability of hooks, which is related to the bait, impacts what we're seeing actually come over the rail. And so we have done work just over the last several years to develop a new tool for us to understand hook availability in terms of what bait is still available once it comes back up after being set out, and how ultimately that impacts what we're seeing in terms of our target species on the hook. So I don't think it gets quite at that, which bait is being used, which has been consistent. But we are, you know, thinking a lot about and actively starting to integrate this idea of hook availability and how that impacts the different stocks that we're indexing here.
Thank you, Dr. Mercer.
Thank you for that. Up next, Ms. Griffin.
Yeah, I just, like Jackie and Terry, I've been hearing a lot about the need for the small mesh survey, the shrimp survey, to come back. And I know that folks at the Science Center have been hearing the same. But I think what I've heard so far about, you know, have plans and seeking opportunities, it's a little too vague for me. And given the importance of it, and the fact that there are, I'm hearing there are third parties interested in doing the work to revitalize that, I would ask that maybe something more concrete, like adding it to the next end or an upcoming NTAP agenda, if that's not possible, maybe having some kind of independent workshop on it. But I want to see something happening with it sooner than later.
Dr. Hare?
Yeah, thank you very much for that. I mean, it's, you know, not, I don't know the Science Center's role in organizing an independent workshop to start a new survey. So happy to talk with the council about what that would look like. Science Center is every year we, you know, ask for resources to support our survey enterprise. And every year we're given resources to support our survey enterprise. And in the current environment, those resources do not support us continuing the shrimp survey nor the clam survey. So we will continue to ask for those resources to support our survey enterprise. And that's what we can do. But if there is interest in sort of, you know, starting a new survey similar to the Science Center Shrimp Survey, the Science Center can participate in those conversations.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Dr. Hare. Actually, that raises an important issue. And the question that I had, too, it's like, what's the interaction and collaboration that's needed between the Science Center and a third party in the council? So maybe if I look at our executive director, maybe leadership meetings between Dr. Hare and our executive director maybe could start those conversations and what might be appropriate or not.
Dr. O'Keefe.
Thank you, certainly. I guess I would also encourage council members to speak to your elected officials around budgeting, and that's not something that I personally or the council as a group can collectively participate in, but certainly if there are budget constraints, then request to Congress on these topics would be appropriate. It's certainly something that Alaska has been pretty effective using Congress to ensure resources for fishery surveys. Thanks.
Thank you. I'll go to the public. I believe that's Ben Martens. I just see a hand. There you go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for finding my hand in the back. Ben Martens with Maine Coast Fishermen's Association, and I would just echo that there is a lot of conversations around the need for some of these other surveys. One of the things that would be incredibly valuable to us as we're thinking about how there might be additional resources that either come into this equation or we go advocate for some of those funds that might be important is in the modeling process, how important these data streams are to the ultimate outcomes. And I think right now we are unfortunately in a place where there's a cost-benefit analysis of every dollar that needs to be sent out into the world. And so if we're saying we need this survey to add different data streams into the models, it would be incredibly helpful so that we could say, if we get all this data replaced into the model, could that move the model 100% in a direction? Could it move the model 5% in a direction? Those types of things are really like black holes for many of us on the outside. I think that as we're talking about new surveys, if we go out and build a thing and get fishermen involved and invested and they collect this data, they do cool things, and then we can put that data into a model and it shifts it 1%, that's not an effective way for us to build trust in science. So that could be a very helpful and an important next step as we're thinking about all of these different models and how they work and interact with the different data streams that we have, or might need to go and recreate in a new environment as things kind of change in the space. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Ms. Martens. That's actually a very valid point. Thank you for that. Ms. O'Dell, hand up. Okay, thank you. Mr. Smith with the last word.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I've been a participant in these conversations about the shrimp survey as well, and since it's come up a lot, I just wanted to share my perspective on it briefly. I had originally reached out to Dr. Ford to discuss what the status of funding for the federal shrimp survey was, and we've heard the answer to that, which it's pursued annually and has not been received in a number of years. So that got me to talking to Terry and a few others about, is there a way we could either try to find some money to fund the federal survey or to use an industry-based approach to trying to do some of the sampling that's happening with small mesh in the summertime. So I just want to be clear that our support, our interest is in trying to get some survey work done in the summertime with small mesh in the Gulf of Maine. We didn't want to go out and do something different than the federal survey, but if there's a way to do it more efficiently and cost-effectively with vessels that aren't the federal survey, we're open to that too. So I appreciate the encouragement to have conversation between the executive director and Dr. Hare and others to, if we're going to do something outside of the federal survey, let's make sure we do it right and we collect data that can be used in the assessments, because that's what everybody wants. So that's what I've been bringing to those conversations, and I just wanted to share it with the group so you know where we're coming from. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. With that, thank you, Dr. Ford, Dr. Mercer, Mr. Chase, for your presentation. We look forward to how your spring survey season